Now let's look at this resurrection of Lazarus and see if there are principles which we can utilize in our progress toward ultimate truth. You probably have suspected that Lazarus was the most advanced disciple of Jesus. And that includes those he picked to be his disciples and to travel with him. It was Lazarus who had received the highest. It was Lazarus who had shown the greatest aptitude. And now it was Lazarus who was allegedly dead. Now we see that courier, and he comes to Jesus and he says, Lazarus is dead. Maybe he handed him a note, I don't recall exactly. And the response that the courier got from Jesus was, thank you very much. And he turns to his disciples and he says, this has happened for the glory of God, so that ye may believe. He doesn't seem a bit alarmed. He doesn't say, let's get there right away. Waits a couple of days. He tells the disciples that Lazarus is only sleeping. And the disciples say, then why do you want to go there? They stoned you there the last time you were in Bethany. If he's only sleeping, he'll wake up. And Jesus says, I mean the sleep that is called death. We shall go and awaken him. And when you see what has happened, you will believe. Martha rushes out when he gets there. Now you've got to see Martha and Mary and the part they play in this picture. They too, you know, were students of the message that Jesus was teaching. Mary, perhaps a good deal higher than Martha. Martha, you might liken to the type who understands the message. Intellectually, she knows what it means. But that spiritual impulse hadn't strongly been developed yet in her. He had to reassure her. Now, don't worry, Martha. Lazarus will rise again. And she says, well, I know, but that's on the last day of the resurrection. And he says, no, no, I mean now, right now, today, your brother will rise. Meanwhile, Mary, she's meditating. She stays in the house still. She knows the power of the silence. But now Martha comes for her, tells her the master is here. And what does Mary say to Jesus? Mary says, if you had been here with us, this would not have happened. It says then that he groaned in the spirit. And you know why. He groaned in the spirit because here was one of his fine pupils who really had a spiritual impulse. And she has told him that if you had been here, this would not have happened. You can feel his pain at her not realizing what she had really said. He was teaching immortality. He was teaching that each man is the Christ of God. He was teaching that I am the light of the world and ye are the light of the world, and she had accepted death as reality. Even she, who had been high in the teaching. And then he goes to the tomb and he weeps. And everyone says, look how he loves that man. And that's not why he's weeping at all. It has nothing to do with the reason that he's weeping. He's weeping because he knows the great, almost momentous task ahead. He can feel the consciousness of the world about him. And he knows how difficult it's going to be to penetrate that material sense of life, when even a Mary, who loves him dearly, who has studied with him, with Lazarus, with Martha, when even a Mary can accept death as reality. And so he groans again in the spirit. But now, Lazarus, come forth. And out steps, after 4 days, Lazarus, still in grave clothes. I think his wrists were tied. And Jesus says, loose him and let him go. Now, this is part of the accepted teaching of the Bible of every church. It happened. We accept it. We say, how wonderful, what a great miracle. And at that point, we begin to worship Jesus as the Father of miracles. And of course, we lose the miracle right there. Now then, what is the significance of a resurrection of Lazarus 2,000 years ago to anyone on earth today? Is it just something to sit back and admire and to intellectually accept? Or can we begin where the rest have decided to leave off and try to, if we can, analyze every step of this activity with the understanding that if Jesus was teaching, and you know that everything he did was a teaching, if he was teaching, it was for a purpose, not to glorify Jesus, glorify the Father, of course, but to aid us to attain the consciousness he displayed there so that we could go forth and do the same. That's right, so that we could go forth and do the same. What was he teaching us? Let's retrace our steps and see this courier now coming to Jesus with a note or a word saying, Lazarus is dead. Now you remember about those who had written to Joel about their backaches or something, put it in the mailbox. Before they even turned away from the mailbox, they felt better because they were not writing to a man. They thought they were. They were writing to a consciousness which happened to be aware of its infinite nature. Now this little courier coming up to Jesus thought it was coming up to a man. Do you think there was a man there to receive that note? The man says, I'm not even here. I'm the light of the world. So that note was handed over to the light of the world, which outwardly appeared to be a man called Jesus. Now, do you think the light of the world accepted the meaning of death as it was intended in that note? Do you think the light of the world became afraid and sad and cried bitter tears of agony, mourning the death of his friend? Why, he didn't bat an eyelash. Merely turned aside to his disciples and said, this is for the glory of God. You might even think he had some advance notice of it. Probably did. Now then, this is the light of God, the Christ. Does it believe in death? Does it not know about the indwelling Christ in every form? You know even now that a resurrection was possible right at that moment. He didn't have to travel to Bethany. But there was a reason, and so to Bethany they went. And now he stands outside the tomb, and who says, Lazarus, come forth? Is it Jesus? But Jesus has told you, I am the light of the world. So we must say that the light of the world, the Christ, is saying, Lazarus, come forth. Is Lazarus other than the Christ? Is Lazarus other than the light? If God is all, and the light of God is the allness of being, the substance of everything that appears as form, then who walks forth out of the tomb? The light of God, the Christ. And again, it appears now as Lazarus. The Christ says, come forth, and the Christ walks forth. Now then, what are we being taught? We're being taught the oneness of spirit, the oneness of the light, the oneness of the Christ. One Christ, two forms. One Christ appearing as Lazarus walking out. One Christ appearing as Jesus calling to Lazarus to walk out. We're being taught that Christ is omnipresent. Now then, that's only the teaching. The application of the teaching is a little exercise I'd like you to consider. Every morning for 7 days, and more during the day if you care to, you must find out what consciousness was present in Jesus at the moment that he received that note from the courier. What was it that enabled him to stand there, unmoved, completely assured that Lazarus would rise? Why not put yourself in his shoes? Why not stand there where Jesus stood and see what you would do if you were handed such a note? Suppose you were given a note today that your best friend had died. Could you prepare your consciousness for that level of awareness that could say, this is for the glory of God? What would be necessary to do this? Let's review our steps and see where we would have to be in order to benefit by that teaching which he gave us that day. We would have to first know who we are. Whoever gave you that note, that telegram, that letter, you'd have to recognize that he was the invisible Spirit of God. You'd have to know that you are. You'd have to be present with the Lord and out of the body. You'd have to be living not as a physical form, but as the enlightened one, the Christ of God, the Spirit of God. That would have to be your consciousness there. And as that consciousness, you would recognize only the truth. You would know only the truth, and you would be free because of it. You would know that there is no Lazarus to be buried except as a form. But the reality of that form being the Christ of God, you would know that whatever is happening in the visible is only the mental picture, and that death to the form is not possible in the only kingdom that exists, your Father's kingdom. Now, at the moment that you would admit the possibility of death, that would have to be through a mental activity on your part, either a conscious or unconscious or reflex mental activity. And in that moment, you would be separated from truth. In the moment that your mind accepted death or the possibility of it, in that instant, you would be separated from the light. And in that instant, you would have lost your demonstration. In that instant, you become a prodigal. Now then, it becomes important to practice this very carefully, to establish for yourself the awareness of the consciousness you require. Now, when you do this, you're going to be very surprised to find that it really straightens your spine. It really does. To your intense astonishment, you find it's possible to even conceive of such a moment when you could stand there without accepting the rumor, the notice, the slander, the libel of God's perfect kingdom. Without even biting your lip, without even your heart fluttering a bit. And then you would have to retain that state which is a non-reactive state, not resisting, a complete and total peace, knowing that God is omnipresent and death cannot occur in omnipresence. You would begin to see that Jesus didn't teach this for any other reason than to show us that this must be our target, that it is attainable, and that ultimately we will all attain that consciousness which can recognize death as an absurdity. Now, it might surprise you to learn that the only reason Lazarus did come forth was to show us that even though to the world he was dead, the light of his being could never die. Because that's all there was of Lazarus, was the light of his being, and that's the light of God. It couldn't die. And the proof is that one who is a majority with God by a consciousness of that light, that one is the light of Lazarus as well as the light of himself. Now watch this. If I come up to you and say to you, you're dead, well, naturally, you're just going to laugh inside and say, he must be crazy. He's telling me I'm dead, and here I'm standing right in front of him. All right. But who are you? You are the light of God. Now, suppose I come to you and tell you your friend is dead. Who is your friend? Your friend is the light of God. Have you accepted a physical friend or a spiritual being? If you had accepted him as a spiritual being, the idea of death to you would be laughable. But further, because he is the light of God and you are one. And when I tell you that he is dead, it's just the same as me telling you that you are dead. Because the one light that you are is an eternal light. And when I accuse or slander God's kingdom by announcing that someone is dead, I'm telling you that you are dead. Because you and that someone are one and the same. And if you accept his death, again, you have separated yourself from your Father. I know this is a high teaching at this point, but there is Jesus showing you just that. He could not accept the death of Lazarus, nor of anyone, for that reason. There are some who believe, and I share their opinion, that he actually had been with Lazarus after the death of Lazarus. Why not? Lazarus, being the light of God, actually hadn't died. He was passing into a higher transition. He was the prize student of Jesus. This was not a normal death of a human being who was going to reincarnate. This was a transition to a higher level. And you know that the Christ, which appeared as Jesus, was in a higher level. It is even said that they had attended an initiation. So you can see how ridiculous it would be to him to be told that Lazarus was dead. You see that on the other side of the veil, Lazarus was very much alive. And there's no other way that he could come forward again into the flesh unless this was so. Do you see that we're being shown that on the other side of the veil of what we call death is life? And life does never change. It is always life, regardless of whether the forms change. Another thing comes from this, and it is this. It would have been a very great disservice to the world to raise Lazarus and none others. Why not just go and raise everyone? Do you think that would have been a good idea? Or again, were we not being shown that death is a very important part of life? A very important part. And that we must learn to accept it as progress in our very life. A very necessary part of our life is this passing from the form. It's the only way we can make transitions. But always the life remains there forever as you. And if you're living as the life, you must begin to accept the transition of form as a very important part of your progress ahead. You must begin to speak to the Lazarus of your own being and to call forth the Christ. Christ, come forth within myself. And then loose the Christ and let it go as your life and let it live you. Now try this tomorrow, the next day, a week if you will. Before you move out into the world, when you have your morning meditation, first have a contemplation in which you try to establish clearly within yourself those qualities of consciousness that are necessary to see life as a continuous, eternal force which can never be shattered or destroyed by any human concepts, or even any human power, or any human might. Establish that, and when you feel it is your consciousness, and you have the conviction of it, then go into the silence. And let the silence teach you, whatever it will. You will discover that even the very first day, these little petty things of our human lives, in comparison, will seem like water off a duck's back. And as you do this for 7 days, something does happen. There is definitely an escalation in this consciousness in which you begin to accept the probability that the Christ consciousness is not outside of your attainment. You begin to see that you are inevitably moving toward it, and it will be yours. Now let's feel this presence in the kingdom within. Accept yourself as the reality of the Christ, the living light, which knoweth no evil, no fear, no death, which knoweth only the Father, knoweth only itself. For this living light that you are is I. deep inside the form I am, ever with thee. I it is who goes before you. I it is who perfects that which concerneth thee. I who will never leave thee until the end of the world. And when you're living in this I of your being, you're one with the Father. For when you're still, you know that I, which you have declared, I is God. You discover that the light of your being is a constant. Only the appearance of form can change, but the light can never go, because I can never leave thee. And I am the light. I am the truth. I am the resurrection. This is what your very being is saying within you. Resurrection from any out-of-form problem is the quiet which permits the eye of your being to be that resurrection. Now this is the consciousness with which we should be able to face every day, until the day becomes a joyous thing, because all we're going to do is walk through forms knowing that I am the light of every form. Wherever I go, I am. Wherever I leave, I remain. And this is the joy of it, the awareness of the infinite eye of your being. And this infinite eye of your being is the infinite eye that stood there and received the note from the courier, telling it that Lazarus was dead. You've already done it, but you're not aware that you've done it. There is only one eye. That is the eye that was the eye of Jesus. It is the eye that is the eye of everyone on the face of the earth. It is our lack of memory of the glory of the past. But the glory that was with thee before the world still is with thee when you are aware that I is your name. Thank you.